give my heart in gratefulness. I live my life to seek your face. I live my life to seek your face. Holy, holy, what a beautiful place. I give my heart in gratefulness. I live my life to seek your face. I live my life to seek your face.
Let's sing one more time.
Holy, holy, what a beautiful place. I live my life in gratefulness. I live my life to seek your face. I live my life to seek your face. I live my life to see your face.
Let me invite you to just, if they're not already, allow your eyes to close or just softly focus. Just take a few nice deep breaths. And just become aware that you're breathing. Breathing in, breathing out. Maybe noticing that you're sitting, being held by the chair and gravity. Gently allowing your awareness inside. Maybe asking the question, what is present right now? We're not resisting, not trying to figure anything out or fix anything, but just to meet what's here with curiosity and compassion. Can you open to this present moment with an undefended heart? Maybe allowing love, peace, joy, or sorrow to be present right now. Maybe this present moment with life as it is holy and sacred. And then just gently bringing your awareness back to your breath, to your body, to the sounds, to the sensations around you. And as you feel ready, gently opening your eyes.
give my heart in gratefulness. I live my life to seek your face. I live my life to seek your face.
Beautiful. Thank you. Just reminded in singing that song, there's a longing in there, isn't there? A prayer, you know, to be with God or the divine or light. And just as we were thinking about that, I was reminded, I think it's in the Gospel of Philip or Gospel of Thomas, what we long for longs for us. This is why it's so important to whatever you're facing in life, to see if it can be connected to a longing, something that you're desiring or wanting, and really hold and honor that. Because there's a holiness. I think that's what makes it holy, is that longing and the knowing that what we want is also wanting us at the same time. It's hard to put into words, but yeah. So today we're starting a new message series on sacred relationship and shifting from a consciousness of stewardship to a consciousness of kinship. And that is from trying to manage and control life in the world to being more fully with the world and how things are. And so before we get into that, though, just a little bit of housekeeping stuff that I just want to reinforce just so that we're all on track with what's going on here. Coming soon, I'm really excited about it. I've been noodling on this for a while, is what I'm going to call the Wisdom School at Unity. And it's going to be a series of classes that are designed to take the principles and the teachings of Unity forward and to see if we can imagine, you know, how Spirit is leading us to bring the principles and the values that we long, that we believe in here, forward into life in 2026 in North Idaho. So I'm really looking forward to it. Our first class coming up is going to be on religious recovery. So many of us have religious stories, and one of the things I've noticed is it can take minutes for us to leave a religious community, but it can take a lifetime for the spirit of religion to leave us. See, and if we're not conscious and we're not aware, the same stuff just shows up in a new community. So I'm really looking forward to that class. I'm not exactly sure when these classes are going to meet yet. I can say I think they're going to be hybrid because, you know, if you're like me, you like stuff in person, but for some of us getting around, it's difficult and whatever, and we've got this wonderful technology called Zoom that allows us to be able to teleconference and do all that kind of stuff. So that'll be happening. There is going to be an application to be a part of this Wisdom School, but I want to just let you know it's not like a pass-fail type of application, okay? So some of you are looking at me like, holy cow, I haven't going back to college. No, this isn't about that. But it is going to be an opportunity for you to just think through a little bit about what might be calling you to this and what you're wanting to get out of it. It's going to be asking, you know, what's on your mind? What are some of the topics that are important to you? It's going to really be kind of some data gathering for me. So that'll be a part of it. And we're going to also offer a sliding scale tuition. So yes, I do believe that there needs to be a financial energetic exchange for this, and the sliding scale will be a tiered tuition based upon your level of financial reality. Have any of you ever seen the green bottle in any of your things? It's a really nice little thing for you to just evaluate, again, your financial reality, and then from there, a suggested tuition to be able to participate in it. But I'm really looking forward to that, so I just wanted to let you know that. There'll be more information coming. Secondly, I really just want to underscore a note of thanks to Reverend Dave, who is helping, doing many things here, but helping shepherd our grounds team that's going on here. And part of what we're talking about doing is just starting out really, really simple and really easy with maybe just having a couple, two or three or four church yard working days, you know, where we just come, maybe show up at 10:30 in the morning, do some projects around here, and then maybe have some pizza for lunch or something like that, you know, and I love doing that. I love getting out in the outdoors and doing it, and again, it's a great opportunity not just to get work done, but to be together as people and beings. So if you have any interest in that, see Reverend Dave, and he'll help you think through that. And then today, just a reminder, all of the men, we're going to do our men's circle at 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the friendship room over there. Again, that's hybrid, so it can be in person or online. We're going to talk about courage. And I really believe that cultivating a sense of healthy courage is something that's useful in this day and age that we live in. And I think during today's message, you'll understand why. All right, any questions or thoughts about that? Thanks for being willing to just let me do that. Okay, so when we think about this idea from stewardship to kinship, the invitation I've already hinted on is this. We are not here, or to consider, we are not here to save the world, but to belong more fully to it. To belong more fully to it. There is a time and a place, yes, where we need to manage and take care and control the things that we do. But I really sense that spirit, through all that's going on in our world today, all of the disruption, all of the chaos that's happening politically, culturally, personally, in all of our lives, is disrupting life as we've known it before. And I think all of this disruption is an invitation for us to enter into a more sacred relationship with being more fully here in this world. The relationship takeaway, this is for those of you note takers, who need a takeaway, okay? You can write this down and then tune out the rest, because I'm going to give you the takeaway and then reverse engineer it, the rest of the message here today. But this is going to be something that I offer throughout, because when we think of sacred relationship, we can think of relationship in many different dimensions, starting with our relationship with ourself. You know, how do we relate to ourself? And then from there, how do we relate to others, our family, our friends? How do we relate to nature, the environment, the world around us? How do we relate to our career, our vocation, our calling? How do we relate to our sense of the sacred or the divine? Some of us come with a very rich openness to immaterial and spiritual. Others of us are very material, yet we see wonder in the scientific material world. Well, there's a relationship in there. When we start talking about this idea of kinship, maybe we can think of this idea of sacred reciprocity, a back and forth. And let me illustrate what I mean by this. Oftentimes in relationship, it starts out like this, with a sense of, what do I need? You know, I have a need. There's something I want. Okay? And then, with the other, what do you need? There's the awareness of what do they have. And sometimes, if you tend toward empathy and compassion like me, it's real easy to get enmeshed in what the other person needs and lose yourself in it. Can anybody relate? Yeah, you know, I've learned that about myself. You know, I have such an orientation toward empathy and toward other people's. But then, if you lose yourself in all of that, you're not really helpful. It's not. You know, it's like when you go on an airplane and they tell you in the unlikely event of a cabin depressurization and the oxygen masks come down, what are you invited to do first? Take care of yourself. You know, some of us forget to put that oxygen mask on, and out of a deprivation of oxygen, we try to help others, and we end up helping nobody. But here's the idea. What I've found, what I've noticed, again, think of just whatever kind of relationship you want. As long as there's a sense of alignment or attunement in that, there's flow, there's relationship, there's connection. But then it doesn't take much for that sense of alignment and attunement to go offline. And then when that happens, what I notice is a sense of disconnection or dissociation. Can anybody relate to the cancel culture? have you ever canceled someone? Or have you ever been, nobody here has ever canceled anyone? Oh, wow, you're so spiritual. I've canceled all kinds of people in my life. I'm not proud of it, you know, but I have. You know, have you been on the receiving end of being canceled? Mm-hmm. Yeah, something gets tough, and what do? You know, cut it out of your life. You don't like something in an organization, what do? Leave. And I think this is unfortunate. So I'd like to introduce you to a third question or a third consciousness that maybe you haven't thought of, and it's this. What do we need? What do we need? What does this relationship need? If it starts with a relationship with yourself, if you experience some disconnection or disharmony, what does the relationship with me need? If it's someone else, a family member, a parent, a spouse, a friend, and something's up, what does this relationship need? If it's with the world or with nature, whatever, you know, what does the relationship need? Often, it could be something like space, maybe time, maybe a sense of compassion, slowing down. But I think oftentimes, again, if we can kind of just add this third element of inquiry to when there's a relational disruption or disconnection, it can be really helpful in helping us to hold it. I think especially when we think about our world today, and would you agree that there's a level of polarization that's present politically and culturally? You know, and there's just a lot of back and forth about, you know, what this side needs or what this side needs or what that other side needs or that other side needs. But if we as a people here could step back and say, what do we need as a species? What do we need as a planet, you know, to hold the polarities that exist? I think it can be very powerful and be very healing. All right. So that's your takeaway. Now I'll just share a few brief reflections, just kind of reverse engineering on all of that. So, art. Any artists in the room here? I am not an artist. I'm not very good. I made it as far as, I think, seventh grade art in school. But I had an art teacher in seventh grade, and as we would often draw things. And it's so funny because I forget 99% of what I learned in that class, except the one thing that this teacher would say as we were drawing something, and he would just walk the room with his arm behind his back and say this, draw what you see, not what you know. Draw what you see, not what you know. And when I think about this in the context of sacred relationships starts with a presence of respect. Respect. The etymology of the word respect is re, which means again, spect, which means see. So to again see, or see again things as they are. I don't know about you, but I am just more and more aware of the biases, the prejudices that I bring, and I'll illustrate it today when you see what it is. When I see something, my mind immediately goes into a default unconscious story-making, meaning-making mode, you know, that sometimes is true, oftentimes is not. And again, the idea here is not to condemn it, to not pathologize it, but to notice it. And maybe even get to a point of just, oh my gosh, I'm in wonder and awe of just the way my mind spins stories and makes meanings of things. Let me show you what I mean. Just watch this. It's a video I took Wednesday. Yes, Sanders Beach. Do any of you remember Wednesday here? I was taken at Sanders Beach on Wednesday morning. It was freezing cold. It was raining. I was out taking a walk with my raincoat and my umbrella, lamenting. It's like, is it ever going to warm up here? Will summer ever arrive? You know, it's good weather if you're a duck. I left all of this over on the west side of the Cascades. You know, what the hell is going on here? And here it is. These moments come for me as an act of grace and surprise. I know you think I'm a minister and I have all of these like incredible practices in my life that I do, and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to find God today. No, I don't. I wake up, I go for a walk, and I'm thinking, I'm freezing my ass off here. Is it ever going to warm up? You know? But I just found myself all of a sudden there at Sanders Beach thinking about R. and Kelly, this the beautiful wedding ceremony we had for you guys down there. And in the midst of this windstorm, there was a strange, eerie peace that came. I can't explain it. I was grateful that I had a raincoat and an umbrella and warm clothes, you know, wondering how many people there are in this world who don't have that luxury, who don't have a nice, warm home to go home to and all of that. But then I was also reminded of this, that for me, God shows up in the midst of the storm. And in how many spiritual, mythological traditions are there stories about messages showing up, not apart from the storm, but in the midst of it, in the midst of the wind, in the midst of the fire, in the midst of the turbulence, in the midst of disruption, somehow the divine is found. And I just have to tell you, the message that this land here in Coeur d'Alene is giving me is a very deep sense of I belong here, just as I am. And you ask, how do I know that? And I would tell you that my body knows that. At least the experience I have in my body of spaciousness, openness, and groundedness. Now, of course, my mind wants to know how long, you know, and for what? So I need contracts and jobs and all these kinds of things that go on, you know, to guarantee it. Sure, I want to be here, but do you want me here? You know, and oh, you know. And again, my mind can just go into those stories. And you know what? Thank you, brain. Thank you, ego, for what you're doing. And I can just breathe in and enjoy the beauty of this place, the beauty of serving this congregation, the beauty of the people that are here, the love that I'm feeling just popping up all over the place in all kinds of surprising ways as I get to know people here and your stories, your hopes, and your dreams. I just get chills as I talk about it because it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. And it's like, wow, thank you, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, wind, rain, the lake, the mountains, the trees, for welcoming me here. I got to tell you this. This is kind of a cute little story, too. Yesterday, I also went and took a walk around Sanders Beach. I noticed some white things floating in the water. I went to pick the golf balls. I've walked around a lot of lakes. I have never seen golf balls floating in a lake. And it's like, what in the world is this? These are Marathon Srixon range balls. Yeah. Like, what in the world? What's that from? Thank you so much. Thank you, Sina, because I wondered about that. I was looking down the end of Sanders Beach, and I think that's the floating green of the resort golf course. Is that it? And the golf balls are floating down there. There was about half a dozen of them just bobbing there in the water, and I thought, how interesting. So I actually took my shoes off, waded out there, took a little stick, and thought, ah, look at this. I could. My golf balls need replenishing. It's just funny, but you know, I was reflecting on that whole experience. A, hoping someday I get a chance to play that course. I've heard so much about it, you know, and I haven't yet, you know. But then it's okay. Getting back to now, what does this have to do with sacred relationship? This is the invitation to watch and to listen for the land And what it says. And you know what the land says to me about all this? Thank you. Nothing. I wish I could tell you, oh, I got this really great metaphysical, mystical invitation, and the Spirit just, you know, nothing. But you know what the land tells me in its nothingness? Of how it's just present as it is in the midst of human interaction. My mind imagines Lake Coeur d'Alene thinking, these humans are just weird creatures spending enormous sums of money hitting a little white ball into the lake and try to, you know, what fascinating creatures. That's just a figment of my imagination. But the land here just gives me this invitation to just presence. In spite of all the ways that this land has been harmed, I don't know if we want to call it harm, in all the way that this land has been engaged, I'll say it that way, you know, by human beings, it's just there. The trees, they're just there. The birds, they're just there. The mountains, they're just there. And there's something about their majestic presence that's so touching and so moving to me. And so I invite you, as you think about, you know, your relationship with the land, to just really watch and listen and just see what comes to you. All right. Something that gets in the way of this, we'll talk more about this. Today is kind of like an overview, so we're going to deep dive into all this stuff. But God does not need our defense, nor has God particularly asked for it. Sometimes in communities, this is a kind of a prequel into religious recovery. You know, religious groups, you know, sort of get this thing that, yeah, we're the one. We're the ones who have the answer. People say this about this church. You know, we got to dust it off and polish it off and, you know, show it off to the community. And I think, sure, you know, but I think this church already is a diamond. We already are bright and shining, you know. Maybe there's some dust on your eye that might prevent you from seeing that, but when I look out here, I see beauty. I see fullness. I see abundance, you know? And I don't need to be up here and to defend it or to justify it or to explain it. I realize when I give messages like this, there's, I guess, maybe a measure of defense of my experience or explanation of my experience. I don't intend it that way. I intend to maybe awaken a little bit of hunger and thirst for you to find your own experience. But as we think about this in terms of the divine, God doesn't need our defense. Nor has God particularly asked for us. Rather, God is solidly with us in whatever life finds us. You know that my, you know, spiritual background includes being raised Catholic, 28 years as a pastor in the evangelical tradition. You know, how have I made peace with all of that? I'm still making peace with all of that, but a significant part of that healing has been my relationship with the cross. Jesus on the cross. I've often wondered what would happen if we added a crucifix to our religious symbols here, you know, how people would respond, okay? But I grew up with this idea of atonement, that we're so bad that God had to punish Jesus because of all of our human badness. That idea of atonement is a Jewish idea. It's a Jewish idea that goes way, way back to years before Jesus, of once a year, a priest going into a holy place, sacrificing an animal on behalf of the sins of the people. There's nothing good or bad or right or wrong. That's just how they practice their faith. Jesus, who was a first century Palestinian mystic Jew, came and shared a message of that. And early followers latched onto that and came up with this idea, well, Jesus is the perfect sacrifice. I don't find that helpful. But what I do find helpful is playing with that word atonement and shifting it from atonement to rather at one meant. And so that image of a man on a cross is more about an archetype of how it is to live in this world with an unprotected, undefended heart. And it's hard for some people. You know, if the belief is Jesus is God, you know, what kind of God would be like this? Well, I think whatever your spiritual belief is, this idea of a God that has just promised to be solidly with you wherever you are in life. That's just what it means to me. I don't know if that's helpful for you, but that's what it means to me. All right, next. I was in a coffee shop the other day and I saw this. Can anybody relate to that? I asked myself if I was crazy, and we all said, no, we're not crazy. As you just get to know yourself, and again, we'll talk more about this in relating to ourself, but just listen to conversations and how many times, you know, when something comes up, a part of me wants to do this and a part of me wants to do that. A part of me wants to do this, a part of me wants to do this, okay? In psychology and medical, you know, we talk about dementia, we talk about schizophrenia, and again, we bring a consciousness of pathologizing and fixing to these conditions. But what if instead we brought a consciousness of curiosity and compassion and awareness that we all have these sub-personalities telling us to do things? And just like with our own family, our own spiritual community, everything is welcomed with curiosity, kindness, and compassion. So we can start with welcoming all these weird neurotic parts of ourselves that say things and do things. Again, I think it's important. And the more skilled, the more adept, the more able we come with being able to be in relationship with ourselves, the more that will show up in being in more healthy relationship with each other. Now, here's the truth. I still don't know all of who I am. Somebody said, you know, James, who are you? I can tell you I know and I don't know. And I can tell you that life and people and events and relationships are all invitations for me to get to know parts of myself better. Being here as a minister, you know, this is the first ministry job I've had since, full-time job, since leaving the evangelical ministry 8 years ago, you know, and there's, you know, sort of demons of my past that come up here, you know, in all of that. And I'm so grateful for the chance to experience those here and, okay, all right. And just learn to be kind and gentle and peaceful with myself. And then hope that that can come out in relationship with others. Now, why is that important? So I take pictures of little things I experience around here. So I came across this 2 days ago. Have any of you seen this? You have? Yeah. So when I saw this, I just went rapidly through the five stages of grief. First, it was shock. I'm like, "What the? What is this?" You know, and I'll just say, my brothers are all super, super conservative. So I shot it off to them. I said, "Hey, you guys want to come join me in Idaho? Because you can drive a pickup like this," you know. And then I realized, oh, how creative! They just rearranged the letters on a Ram truck, you know, to make that work. All right, but what about this war thing? Again, we'll talk more about this in a future message. This is why I'm excited in the men's circle today to talk about courage, because I really believe a healthy courage is what's needed today. We have, if you haven't heard, a global American spiritual leader and an American global political leader giving very contrasting messages on war and peace. If you haven't noticed, just Google Pope Leo, President Trump. Just want to say a couple comments about this, all right? First of all, where I'm landing with a car like this, I'd love to meet the driver of this car, you know, and just get to know them a little bit. And maybe ask, is there a longing? Is there a hope? Is there something embedded, you know, in this? When I think of Donald Trump, and I think of Pope Leo. Could it be that both of these beings want the same thing, but are coming at it from two very different angles that maybe are needed? So just to give you a little bit of context about this here, I'll just see if I can make sense of this. Christianity has a history of war being sanctioned by popes. Just Google the Crusades. From the period 1000 AD to about 1200 AD, there are 8 known ones, many other ones, where popes sent soldiers to the Holy Land to expunge Muslims. Now, Christians are the first to say, oh, that's not Christianity. That was just a dark, unevolved time of our history. Folks, you need to know this. Every Muslim is taught about those. They're very well aware of a Christian desire to dominate the world. Why is that important? How many Americans are taught that Muslims are terrorists? I was, until I met some. And I realized Islam, you know what Islam means? Peace. Peace. And if a Muslim says, well, the terrorists and the people that do things, you know, that's just not Muslim. Some of us say, oh, the hell it isn't. Does September 11th, 2001 mean anything? You know, and this, that, and the other thing. Okay? And back and forth and back and forth we go. Israel. Do you know the beginning of the word Israel and where it came from? Maybe you Bible geeks. Genesis chapter, what? Yes. That's exactly right, Kelly. Genesis chapter 32. Jacob, one of Abraham's sons, has a dream where he's wrestling with God, only to find out God was always right there. And in the aftermath of that dream, gets a new name from Jacob, which means one who supplants, one who literally holds the heel. That's actually the meaning of the word James, by the way. To Israel, what's the meaning of Israel? One who wrestles with God. One who wrestles with God. And so this idea, and in that story, Genesis chapter 32, the story of Jacob wrestling with God was a mythopoetic illustration of him just wrestling with himself. So this is why, again, sacred relationship is so important, because whatever issues we have out there with the God or the divine or something, I think are just reflections of things that we might be battling with ourself. Can we welcome, can we hold that battle? And so say whatever you want about the war in Iran. You know, 47 years ago, Iran declared war on the U.S. And do you remember who called the U.S. the Great Satan? The Ayatollah Khomeini? I was just a kid, punk kid in high school at the time, but I remember that. I remember going to Russia in 2003, thinking that, you know, we hated these people and they were the evil empire and all that kind of stuff. And I realized I had two very different experiences of taking a tour around Moscow. One was from an older tour guide who looked at us Americans with suspicion. Why? Because they saw America and Western civilization as the source of greed, pornography, sexual immorality, sexual exploitation, pedophilia, crime, you know. Communism for them was a safe place. I had a job, I had housing, I had food, I had clothing, you know, provided by the government, you know. So America was a threat. The next year I went back, I had a younger tour guide who looked at Americans as the great savior of the world, you know, and the bastion of freedom, democracy, opportunity, okay? So the reason I'm saying all this is we have to be able to, can we hold in sacred relationship these contrasting opinions of what's going on? What does it mean to be just? I meant to say this when I was talking about Jesus on the cross. This idea of atonement, killing someone or something for the sins of others, is a punitive, retributive view of justice. And many of us here today, I think, carry that. You know, someone shoots you, shoot them. The way to stop a gun is to have a bigger, faster gun. That's retributive, punitive justice. God's spirit, love source, as I see it, is not so much retributive as it is restorative. And again, my friends, it starts with yourself. I think. Do you beat yourself up? Kill yourself? Or can you, with the love and compassion you have with yourself, be able to hold the terrible injustices that are going on in the world today with that same level of wisdom and compassion? I'll leave you with this. I thought this was good. Scientific and spiritual progress is not the path of better answers, but better and more precise questions. Not better answers, but better questions. If you read the book of Job in the Bible, this was a man who lost everything. And throughout his spiritual journey with his friends, trying to explain everything away, finally encounters God and realize he's been asking the wrong questions. Not the wrong questions, just not the best questions. Everything that we discover along the path oftentimes is not about getting better answers, but in getting better questions. And as such, we can know wisdom, we can know peace, we can know love and courage. I'd just like to close today with a poem by Jeff Foster on courage. If you can take away today a little hunger and thirst for courage in your life, then it will be a success. Courage is your willingness to not know, to speak your truth, to walk your path, to face ridicule and rejection, to keep going despite the voices in your head and the judgments of others. And there are no guarantees you will make it. No one can walk for you. You can walk in radical aloneness, naked in the face of life, no protection, no crutches, no external authority, no ideology to save you, no promises anymore, only the beating of the heart and the air in the lungs and the thrill and terror of being utterly free and no longer numb. And a knowing from deep within, and the call of your ancestors, and the ground holding you, and the sun nourishing you, and the fragrance of love everywhere, and the warm tears running down your cheeks, and this gorgeous vulnerability, which makes you totally unbreakable. Yeah. Amen, and so it is.
I think we should clap for him. Thank you. Thank you very much. What a great message. Great message about nature, for one. I love that. And Brian and Jim, could we get the lights back up? I mean, as much as I'd like to say I want to see these beautiful people better, it's really about me wanting to see my music better. Thank you. If there was ever a day that we could be grateful and praise God and live in joy, this is the day, right? This is it, this moment. So here's a nice song called Let There Be Praise.
The Spirit of God is within.